update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on Hammond Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr.'s run for Congress. Tyson Foods, Inc. will close its meatpacking plant in North Central Indiana, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with State Representative Earl Harris Jr. about the racial disparity in data related to the COVID-19 pandemic. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Lake County Sheriff Oscar Martinez Jr. is endorsing Hammond Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr. in his bid to seek the Democratic Party nomination for Congress. The Times reports Martinez specifically credited his endorsement because McDermott helped Martinez win the election in 2018. Martinez said McDermott, quote, always prioritized public safety and strongly supported first responders, in addition to getting millions in funds for his city's projects. Last week, Brand New Congress, a group working to elect members of Congress, endorsed Democratic Valparaiso attorney Jim Harper for the House seat now held by Pete Visclosky. The organization states it, quote, puts people before party to make government more accountable and responsive to the needs of all Americans.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
A Schererville man has been charged with murder in the death of his girlfriend's 5-year-old son, whose bruised body had fresh bite marks. 26-year-old Michael J. Tunstall was arrested last Friday on murder and aggravated battery charges in the child's death. Court records say the boy died from blunt force trauma to the head and abdomen. The Times reports that a police officer questioned Tunstall after seeing the bite marks and bruising on the child's body. Tunstall told the officer that he had played a, quote, bite game with the boy. He's currently being held at the Lake County Jail.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Authorities say the remains of an Illinois mother of six have been found in Northwest Indiana more than 13 months after she went missing. Lakeshore Public Radio's Tom Maloney has more.
Lake County Sheriff Oscar Martinez Jr. says the remains identified as those of 36-year-old Jessica Flores of South Chicago Heights, Illinois, have been found in a wooded area in Gary. A Gary City worker discovered a skull and other remains in the wooded area last week. The Times reports Lake County Sheriff's deputies, Gary Police, and a cadaver search dog turned up additional remains. Martinez says dental records confirm the identity of the remains. Flores disappeared in Gary in February 2019. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Tom Maloney.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Tyson Foods, Inc. will temporarily close its meatpacking plant in Logansport after 146 employees tested positive for COVID-19. The Tyson Fresh Meats plant in Logansport produced 3 million pounds of pork daily. Tyson suspended production Monday to allow for cleaning and sanitizing. The plant reopened Tuesday and is running at limited capacity because of decreased worker attendance. The company on Wednesday announced it will stop all production by Saturday. Steve Stouffer of Tyson's beef and pork subsidiary says when such facilities close, quote, the availability of protein for consumers across the nation will only decrease.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The Indiana Supreme Court issued an order on Monday to shield, at least in part, federal COVID-19 stimulus checks from creditors. Groups including the Indiana Institute for Working Families and Prosperity Indiana had petitioned the court to help protect payments from the CARES Act. The order halts state courts from issuing any new orders that seize or garnish the stimulus checks, except in child support cases. That doesn't apply to past court orders from before the COVID-19 pandemic hit Indiana. In those cases, a person who wants to protect their stimulus money must have a court hearing, whether in person or remotely. The order only lasts as long as Indiana is under a public health emergency.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
U.S. Senator Todd Young says the Federal Payment Protection Program, or PPP funding, is meant for small businesses, and big companies that received some of the money should return it. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brendan Smith reports a few Indiana companies are among those businesses that likely should not have received the dollars.
The PPP is meant to help small businesses keep employees on the payroll and cover their bills. And Senator Todd Young says it looks like that's where most of the money is going.
Because the average national loan is right around the $200,000 range. And most of the loans are $150,000 or less.
But some publicly traded companies received those funds, including Emmis Communications and Hallador Energy in Indiana. Young says they should return the money.
I do think that there will be some public resistance towards those companies and those individuals who are tapping into a finite amount of money.
Congress is set to refresh PPP funding in its latest relief package. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The University of Notre Dame officially introduced Neil Ivey as the new head women's basketball coach Thursday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jennifer Weingart has more.
Neil Ivey played for Notre Dame. She was part of the team that earned the Irish their first NCAA tournament win in 2001. Following the win, she spent 5 seasons playing for the WNBA on the Indiana Fever. Ivey returned to Notre Dame as an assistant coach under Muffet McGraw in 2007. She left ND to spend the last season as an assistant coach for the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies. Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick says no other coach was considered to succeed the legendary 33 seasons of McGraw. In opening remarks at a virtual press conference, Ivey choked up when thanking McGraw.
To Coach McGraw, I'm here because of you. You believed in me.
Ivey says being just 1 year removed from the program will help her jump into the new job.
And I'm just going to hit the ground running today to reach out to those that I think that will help with this program. And again, I'm just going to rely on those relationships that I built and created when I was here.
Ivey says she's looking forward to taking the lessons she learned from McGraw and with the Grizzlies and putting her own stamp on the program. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jennifer Weingart.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana has chosen the SAT as the high school exam students will take as part of the transition to new graduation requirements. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains why the change is happening as more colleges across the country adopt testing optional policies for admissions.
A growing number of colleges don't require SAT or ACT scores for admissions, including Indiana University, Ball State, and Hanover College. But all Hoosier high schoolers will take the SAT starting in 2022, and scores will be used to evaluate high school's quality. Bob Schaefer heads Fair Test, an advocacy center critical of standardized tests. He worries using those scores for school ratings will hurt communities with limited resources and funding.
The test itself is a measure of accumulated opportunity and privilege, not necessarily academic mastery.
Lawmakers approved the change during the 2018 legislative session. According to Education Week, 12 other states use the SAT or ACT for accountability. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Many Hoosiers are facing unemployment due to the COVID-19 crisis. Because of that, the state says utilities aren't allowed to disconnect water, sewer, or electricity to their customers until the emergency order has lifted. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, uncertainty over when that might happen is worrying both utilities and consumer advocates.
Kerwin Olson is the executive director of the consumer advocacy group, the Citizens Action Coalition. He says when the emergency order lifts, it's likely many Indiana residents will still be unemployed and unable to pay.
Our fear is, you know, mass disconnections by utilities because of these enormous balances.
But since most businesses and schools have shut down, utilities are also struggling financially, especially the smaller ones, which describes most water and sewer utilities in the state. Citizens Action Coalition is proposing the state create a temporary task force so utilities and consumer advocates can discuss these issues and make recommendations to the governor. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana's stay-at-home order has been in place for about a month, drastically reducing operations in the hospitality industry. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports, restaurants in the state are estimated to lose nearly $1 billion in sales in April.
While some restaurants have shifted to carry-out services, many have cut workers' hours or let employees go. So far, about 2% of restaurants in a recent National Restaurant Association survey say they have permanently closed. That number is expected to rise to 4% in the next 30 days. Indiana Restaurant and Lodging Association President Patrick Tam says federal aid from the Paycheck Protection Program has been scarce, with very few receiving the money in the state.
Some that have received those dollars are very reluctant to even utilize them because they do not want to be on the hook for a loan at this time.
Tam says he expects restaurants will make changes once they reopen to ensure the safety of customers and workers in response to the pandemic. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
First-time parents have a lot to celebrate, but right now, there's also a lot of fear. SideFX Public Media's Lauren Bavis spoke with a mom-to-be about what it's like to be pregnant during a pandemic.
Ariana Thompson had big plans for her pregnancy. A photo shoot, two baby showers, one in South Bend, Indiana, where she lives, and one with family in Chicago. Everything was canceled.
Every first time mom gets a baby shower. But then I was like, well, it's better safe than sorry.
Thompson now spends her days inside, unless she has to go to the store to stock up on diapers. Her last in-person appointment with her midwife was more than a month ago.
I'm just counting down the days at this point. I'm like, 30 more days.
30 days until she gives birth to a girl she's naming Heaven Noel. Thompson found out she was pregnant last August, 3 days after her 24th birthday. A lot has changed since then. As she waits to give birth, COVID-19 cases are surging in Indiana. She's worried about what will happen if she gets sick or her fiancé gets sick. Her childbirth class was canceled, so she's not sure what to expect during labor.
I'm going in like a deer in headlights.
There are a lot of unknowns when it comes to COVID-19 and pregnancy. Pregnant women are at higher risk for complications from respiratory viruses like the flu, but there's not enough data to say if the same is true for COVID-19. Guidelines to keep pregnant women healthy are the same as for people who aren't pregnant. That means social distancing. And that's hard for people like Kelly Breen.
It's difficult to kind of think about different ways that you can replace physical touch.
Breen is Thompson's doula. A doula provides support during pregnancy, labor, and postpartum. Breen usually builds trust by spending time with clients in person. That hasn't been possible for weeks. Instead, she teaches virtual birth classes, which is a challenge.
We practice going through contractions together, and I'm watching how she holds her body, how she furrows her brow. So I'll do things like a very slight, gentle touch on her forehead and ask her to release her eyebrows. So not being able to actually go and practice that physically, that can be tricky.
Breen asks parents to repeat her instructions so they know what to do if she can't be with them, because many hospitals have restricted patient visitors to limit the spread of COVID-19. That means women who plan to have a doula and their partner with them during labor may not have that support. And that's what Thompson is most afraid of, that if the pandemic worsens, she won't be able to have her doula and her fiancé with her.
Now, that's one thing that I can't do, because essentially there's no comfort zone.
Things are even more complicated because Thompson is Black. While there isn't much known about how COVID-19 affects pregnancy, it's well established that infant and maternal mortality rates in the U.S. are worse for Black women. This is Breen again.
The issues that we're having come from lack of quality care and not being listened to. So it's more of a risk for us not to have someone there.
That puts physicians like Dr. Bronson Tucker Edmonds in a difficult spot. She's an obstetrician gynecologist and researcher at the Indiana University School of Medicine. She knows her Black patients may feel uncomfortable in the hospital, and having support from family and a doula can lead to more successful births. But she has to balance patient fears with overall safety, especially while there are shortages of protective equipment for doctors, patients, and visitors.
Obviously, these are things that under any normal circumstance, we would want people to be able to share with their loved ones.
Thompson will give birth using a midwife at Memorial Hospital in South Bend. The plan is for her fiancé and doula to be there, as long as hospital rules don't change. Meanwhile, family who plan to visit postpone their trip. Thompson says they're upset they won't see her growing belly, but they know staying away will keep her and her baby safe. They joke it'll make a great story one day.
She made it through a pandemic. That'll be something you get to tell her when she's older.
They're planning a baby queue, a barbecue celebrating Heaven's birth for this summer. Lauren Bavis, Side Effects Public Media.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with State Representative Earl Harris, Jr.
This is regionally speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Indiana Black Legislative Caucus is asking Governor Eric Holcomb to make some changes, and as they've stated in a letter with the several points as well, and try to deal with the problems that have been discovered and publicized lately about the disproportionate number of African Americans who are contracting and unfortunately dying from the coronavirus that has spread across the country. We have with us today to talk about the letter that has gone to the governor's office, the vice chairperson for the Black Legislative Caucus, State Representative Earl Harris, Jr. He's from East Chicago, and thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today, sir.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'll let you kind of state some of the information that's out there in summary as to the concern that has kind of been voiced here by the Legislative Caucus about how things have spread among the African-American community as far as the virus is concerned and how we're trying to deal with that now.
Yeah, that's one of the things that the IBLC, the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, has been focusing on. When you talk about numbers, the African-American population in Indiana is about 9.8%, and the count is about 20% of deaths. I mean, you're talking about and positive cases, so you're talking about twice the amount of people are getting affected and passing away as there are in the state. And so we've kind of broken down and looked at some of the reasons that are causing the problems. I mean, those you're talking about economic problems, you're talking about systemic racism, different things like that that are causing more African Americans and minorities to be affected. Also, the types of jobs. I mean, it's interesting what we now look at as essential workers is changing. And there are a lot of Blacks, a lot of minorities that are in those jobs where they did not go away. They become more important, and there is also more exposure to people because you're talking about working at grocery stores, working at restaurants, things like that, and that also don't necessarily have as high a pay. And then you get into also insurance issues or lack of insurance issues. So those are some of the reasons that have played a role in why Blacks and minorities have become such a high ratio of people getting this and dying from it. Mm-hmm.
I know that the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. has been working with the NAACP on this issue, and in particular in looking at the status of, number one, of African-Americans involved in the workplace, but also the issues of all these inequalities in health care that unfortunately have come to light because of COVID-19.
Very true. I mean, even if you want to look into a history of distrust, and I hate to say that, but it's the reality. There's even a history of distrust with Blacks and minorities in medicine. I mean, there's many stories about the way people have been treated differently because of their skin color. I mean, even you get into, if I remember correctly, Venus Williams. I mean, you're talking about Venus Williams, mm-hmm. You know, possibly the greatest female or greatest tennis player ever. And when she had issues with her pregnancy and childbirth, there were things that were kind of passed off as, oh, you're okay, you're fine. There are a lot of people, Black people, that report those types of issues of not being taken seriously. by the medical profession. So those types of things do not play well in people trusting and getting the proper care needed.
Now, this letter that has gone on to Governor Holcomb from the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, it's been signed by a dozen minority senators and representatives in the legislature, asking the governor to take some action. In particular, it deals with not only data, but also, too, I know that some of your members of the caucus, in particular with State Representative Greg Porter of Indianapolis, is wanting to see some funds get allocated from the state to help local health departments out. Tell us how this all links together.
Well, it all links together in just adding to the amount of resources that are available, adding to the amount of places that people can go to get the type of help that they need. It may be a case of if you don't trust the medical, there may be the direct medical hospital doctor, et cetera. There may be another organization or situation that will help people and be that bridge and help people get the correct type of help and support that they need. You know, this is something that we haven't dealt with before, where, you know, people are figuring out, and as you brought up a little earlier, it's bringing to light or providing more light on some issues that have been in place for years and decades that have never been dealt with that we now have to deal with.
And do you think it's the case because local health departments maybe should have gotten more guidance or more financial assistance, for that matter, from the state, in particular the State Department of Health, in dealing with some of these issues in the past, or being aware that they are there or they could crop up? Like in this case, the coronavirus has been out there. The virus itself in some other form has been out there for years, as far as anybody's detected. But this is the first time that such a virulent strain of this virus has taken over.
You know, money is always a helpful asset to anything. We're facing something that people, you know, there's still people to this day that don't believe this is real. I'm sure you've heard and the viewers have heard the whole, oh, this is not worse than regular flu. We're making too much out of this. I mean, part of it is just getting people to understand. Part of it is knowledge. Part of it is education. And, you know, maybe this is one of those things that will help people to better understand the type of protections that we need in place, the type of organizations that monitor and do things about this and set things up so that if this happens again, and we, you know, God help us, it does not, but if it happens again, we're better prepared.
I know that the analysis that was done by the Center for American Progress talks about the fact that the health officials really should have gotten a clue back when the H1N1 virus was going around and the crisis that resulted from that, because of the impact, especially on Hispanic and Native Americans, which could very well have switched over as well to African Americans too.
One of the things you have to look at, or we need to look at, is culture. I mean, culture plays a role in things. Different ethnicities, different races, different cultures deal with and work on things differently. And so we have to take into account what that means in terms of how, you know, how we get information out there, how do we help people, how do we relate to people. I mean, I'll bring up something that's part of what's going on now is we have the census, which obviously has been affected by this.
Right.
But look at the effect and the rhetoric that's been out there about that and the distrust of Hispanic Latino population wanting to get involved in that. So you have to look at cultures and how you best educate and train people, because yes, there may be different cultures, maybe different races, ethnicities, but the reality is we all live together. So if it negatively affects one, that's going to translate into and have an effect on everyone else.
Now, have you or any of the other members of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus gotten any response back to the letter that you sent on to the governor?
As of us having this conversation right now, no, I have not seen anything in terms of response. I know he did, and I forget what day it was, his daily updates he did bring up, because that was the question that was asked by a couple of people of the media. And he did reference the letter and how, you know, there's been previous work with the Black Caucus, but I don't believe at this point we have received a direct response.
Sorry,
and one of the things that we really want to work on and really is something is when we get into the recommendations is the Health Disparity Task Force. That's something that we really would like to see happen and get put in place sooner than later.
Certainly, it wouldn't take long to be able to help get that set up. There are probably people waiting to be members of the task force. If they haven't been asked, they certainly would volunteer in a moment, I would think.
My undergrad is from IUPUI, and my mentor, Amy Conrad Warner, she's a mentor and great friend. She reached out to me immediately because she's vice chancellor at IUPUI and said, hey, let me know what you guys need from us, and we will be more than happy to be a part of it. So, yes, people are, besides us reaching out, we're also having people that are reaching out to us.
That's great. Well, this is expanding just beyond a letter, a mere letter that went to the governor's office, to be sure about this. And Representative Harris, thank you very much for spending time and keeping us up to date, please, on this as things develop, as we know that we're trying to deal with the stay-at-home order and all the other problems that the coronavirus pandemic has created for us. We're trying to do a little more research into how to keep people healthy and everybody, in this case of Hoosiers, not just one particular race, to be sure. Thank you very much for bringing us up to date, and we hope to hear back from you soon.
Oh, thank you. And can I add one more real quick thing?
Certainly.
I want to emphasize the importance of people staying at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things we as the Black Caucus are going to be putting out some media pieces and things like that to make sure that people understand the importance of this and what this will do in terms of decreasing the negative effect that this will have on us, decreasing the people that are infected, as well as decreasing the amount of lives we lose.
Well, maybe this is not the first time we've heard this message, but it was certainly the first time you've heard it from the Black Legislative Caucus. And Representative Harris, thank you very much for passing that on to us. We'll consider the word out there now, to be sure.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. State Representative Earl Harris Jr. is from East Chicago, and he's the vice chairman of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.